And welcome back to Coast, Stuart Rhodes with us this hour from Oath Keepers. We will take your phone calls. You've heard what we've been talking about. All kinds of special things that are important to you. Trust me, the stand your ground laws. And what would you do, by the way, if somebody broke into your house and you had a handgun? Would you use it regardless of whether the person seemed to have a weapon or not? What would you do? Check in with us and we'll take your calls too. Welcome back to Coast, our special guest, Stuart Rhodes, this hour as we take your phone calls. He is from Oath Keepers. And Stuart, again, what's the special sign-up for our listeners?
It's a deal of 20% off for all of our memberships, and they're in the running for a Daniel Defense M4 if they join between now and midnight tomorrow night, Wednesday.
Now, what does that mean, M4?
It's a Daniel Defense AR-15, the civilian version of an M4 rifle.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good.
Pretty
indeed.
Awesome rifle.
How many members do you have?
Approximately 30,000. It goes up
wow.
and down depending upon the season.
That's huge.
It's not bad.
Not bad at all. Not quite as big as the NRA, but not bad, huh?
Not for sure.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. They're lining up, and this hour will go by really fast. We'll pick it up by going to Daniel in Manhattan, Kansas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. I have a question for Stuart.
Sure.
How do you think the Second Amendment is impacting the educational system? And I mean the assault on the Second Amendment.
How is it? I mean, I think our children are being brainwashed in public schools. Is that what you're talking about?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at, you know, my kids are all homeschooled for good reason. And you can look at what's happening right now. These kids are being... You know, they do a fire alarm drill, bring all the kids outside, and ta-da, it turns into an anti-gun protest. It's like something out of a Orwellian nightmare. They're just being, you know, forced by their teachers to go out there and parade around holding up signs, and they're being brainwashed. But thankfully, quite a few kids can read for themselves and look on the Internet, or they grew up hunting and shooting, and they're just not buying it. So there's a backlash happening among the pro-gun kids, too.
Why is there such an assault, Stuart, on the Second Amendment? I mean, it's everywhere. Why is that?
Well, they have to disarm us. I mean, the left, the Democratic Party, is now dominated by Marxists. I think we all can just accept the reality. And the left, and look at their history. Look at the history of Marxists throughout the 20th century. They want total control, the totalitarian ideology, very much like the radical Islamist ideology is totalitarian, and they want total control, and so they want to disarm their political opponents. We are their political opponents. They have not successfully brainwashed us or purged us and purged our views. We're passing them on to our children that they can't quite manage the stuff to stomp us out, and so they want to disarm us because eventually... It's going to end where it always ends, in big ditches full of bodies. It's blunt reality. Their mindset is totalitarian, and they're not going to stop until they get their ultimate desire, which is total control over us.
Stuart, are you familiar with the work of Dr. John Lott out at
Absolutely.
The University
right.
of Chicago?
Yeah, you bet.
He's a good one. He knows his business, and you know his studies always show that a concealed carry area is a safer area, and I believe that's the case too, don't you?
Well, absolutely. Let me clarify what I said a moment ago. I'm talking about the political bosses at the top. I think a lot of people on the political left, even a lot of the teachers, they don't know better. They've been brainwashed themselves, and they've been in all these kids in high schools and colleges. So we have to keep that in mind. What I would say is never forsake them. Always try to reach out and talk to them and reeducate them. But just understand that the ones at the very top, they know exactly what they're doing. And their goal is to disarm us for political reasons. They don't want us to be armed and able to resist what else they have planned for us. So,
all right, back to the other calls. Linda's in Auburn, California now, west of the Rockies. Hi, Linda. You're on with Stuart Rhodes. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'm batting 1,000.
Yes, you are. Keep it up.
I'm trying. I don't have a question as much as a point I want to make to Stuart. I don't think that it really matters about the society, the people, the culture, the guns, the Constitution. I think actually what it comes down to is aliens fighting aliens.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, Stuart.
I was afraid you might cut me off, but I wanted to say
it. No, I won't cut you off at all. I wanted you to get your views, but maybe not. Maybe not. If there are aliens, they may be illegal that come into the country. Maybe those are the ones you're talking about. You never know. Joe in Long Island, New York, welcome to the program. Joe, go ahead.
Stuart, I have two questions. The first one's a little bit sci-fi. I would wonder if handguns could become laser-like, where you could just disintegrate someone, and then whatever you did would not be found out. If that technology became available. I know they use lasers to some degree in China, supposedly. So that would be a theoretical question, but I wonder if that did actually happen. So my second question would be relating to Montana. I found out you have been able to carry a gun in Glacier National Park, for example.
Right.
I've hiked extensively, and I was always a little bit worried about, like, maybe like a wolf or something like that running at me.
Right.
But also, just for someone, say, getting attacked by someone's dog, what would justify, like, defending yourself there? And also that Orlando nightclub, it seems like that particular shooting went on for, as I can remember, maybe 2 hours, where there was no redress for the people that were just being picked off almost like one by one.
Yeah, that's a good example of fail. They had an off-duty police officer posted outside. He was on the outside. When the shooter went inside, he didn't go in. And you can of course, say, well, you can't Monday morning quarterback. That was his responsibility.
That's right.
And so it shows, you know, the bartenders, someone should have been armed inside of the club. And also when the police got there, they didn't go right in. They waited too long. I mean, I said the same thing. Matt Bracken said the same thing. They pretty much failed again. They should have gone straight in with the SWAT team and engaged him and stopped the killing. But they didn't do that. People bled out. They bled out even those who weren't shot again by him. It took so long to get medical care to them that they bled out. So that's a good example of why you can't rely on the police to do it for you. You've got to be able to protect yourself, you know, seriously.
Absolutely. And, Joe, what was that first question about lasers?
Yeah, in other words, say there was something like a person could carry around a handgun that could shoot a laser where you could flat out disintegrate someone. There would be no evidence of the crime.
Right. Well, we're not there yet, but, yeah, I see what you're saying. You wouldn't. That'd be the assassin's dream, right? People just disappear.
Poof.
Yeah. Colin did it, but he did it much more messily. Yeah.
Poof, they're gone. And if people want information about stand-your-ground laws in their particular state, would you be able to get it from Oath Keepers? Where do you get it?
I would go to the NRA. I believe there's also several different books out there that are written on the gun laws of each state. But I would probably start at the NRA.
All right, next up, let's go to Joel in Miami. Welcome to the program. Hi, Joel. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. How are you today?
Great. Thank you.
And I wanted to ask your guest a question. The question I wanted to ask him is, how does he feel about law enforcement and military personnel if, God forbid, the government's turn to, you know, the Marxist way and they do try to disarm the public? Will these people forfeit their paychecks and their benefits to be we the people, or will they be on the other side of the fence waiting to be destroyed by we the people?
I think it depends. I think in the military, hands down, the majority, especially those in the infantry branches, Marine Corps and Army, would be on our side because they don't look at that as their career. As we kind of touched on earlier when Greg was talking, the higher someone gets in the ranks, this is true for officers also, the more they tend to see it as their meal ticket to their retirement, and the more likely they are to be political animals who would do what they're told. And so, you know, the split's also down, in like you were saying, with sheriffs versus police chiefs.
And doesn't the military, of course, have the right to reject an unlawful order?
Right. Sure. I mean, that goes without saying, actually, but let's go ahead and say it. You have both the right and the duty to refuse an unlawful order. And that's true in the military. It's also true of police officers. That's why that oath to the Constitution matters. We're talking about, you're talking about the pragmatic, you know, what will they do? I think the ones who, that's kind of the point of Oath Keepers, is try to get more of them to make that decision in advance so they understand this is their moment in history to do the right thing. And what we hope is that they will not even think about their job or their pension. But the reality is, this is why the founders did not trust standing armies. This is why they supported a militia as the primary defense of a free state, because they did not want to have people who were professional soldiers or professional police who are more likely to follow orders because their entire livelihood is dependent upon it. Now, we are in a situation where we do have both a large standing army and professional police forces. So the founders' admonition to rely on the militia has not been followed. We'd like to fix that. But meanwhile, we have to deal with the reality that we do have professionals. Now, some of these professionals who I know personally, like Greg, they're not going to give it a second thought. They'll do the right thing, even if it costs them their job. But there are quite a few who will tell you, hey, my pension, you know, I got to make sure that I have my pension and take care of my family. And so it'll depend upon the person. So what my encouragement to you is make sure that you reach out to every law enforcement officer in your community and start working on them now to get them to see, you know, see the reality that they have to do the right thing for the right reasons. Because if they don't, not only will they eventually be defeated by us, the people, but also they'll be on the side of wrong, you know, as far as morality goes, before God. They'll be judged.
We are with Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers, taking your calls, of course. We'll do it also when we come back after the break. James in Los Angeles, go for it. James, you're up.
Thanks for taking my call, George. I've got a couple of questions that I think you'll find really interesting, Stuart, as well. First of all, I voted for Ron Paul in the past few elections. I was actually a colleague of Gerald Celente, James Morris, who had called him about, the president of Iran with the Shah of Iran when he had that, it was Mossadegh instead. But anyway, what I want to talk about also a very concerning issue regarding gun control here in America right now. We've got, or at least especially in California, and as California goes, the rest of the country can too, if you look at Maryland and California. And that, of course, is banning the AR-15 and the, you know, AK-47s, assault weapons, as they call them, with the bullet buttons and all that. And now there's legislation in the works that, fortunately, Jerry Brown had vetoed the last time it came around. But now, with Gavin Newsom getting in eventually, and that is, of course, banning featureless rifles that have the fin grip over the pistol grip and the flash hider with the muzzle brake and also the collapsible stock that's pinned. And many Californians, to avoid long gun registration or assault weapon registration, basically went featureless. And now there's talk about banning that. And I wanted to get Stuart's thoughts on that. And secondly, Stuart, I wanted to commend you also for the YouTube interview you did with Gary Franchi, exposing John McCain and how he was, songbird John McCain in Vietnam, and how basically his whole career is based on a fraud. And you can actually look that up on YouTube. I hope you can, George can ask you about that, because I know George is an admirer of John McCain. And you did that interview with Gary Franchi, exposing how he collaborated with the Vietnamese big time and the leaked CIA tape, and that never got out and never heard it talked about on Coast to Coast. And also, when I confronted John McCain about his involvement with the USS Liberty cover-up in San Diego, you can Google that, McCain confronted. And lastly, you can look up my friend Stephen Snagosky's The Transparent Cabal book, and also Phil Giraldi, the CIA operative. They've all got articles at UNZ.com, UNZ.com, about the neoconservative war agenda against Iraq, Syria, and Iran. And we never hear that discussed. All we have are Israel first Jewish Zionists that come on the show every time, Mr. Bloom and Mr. Curtis, and we never get the other side. Why don't we have Phil Giraldi come on, and perhaps my friend Stephen Snagosky for his excellent The Transparent Cabal book.
That's quite a mouthful.
I don't know what question he's asked you, Stuart.
I'll go to the one about the guns in California. I have family in California. I was born in Fresno, actually. And I've got family still there. And like you said, they're chipping away wherever they possibly can. And of course, the ultimate goal is to disarm you entirely. And so Californians are going to have to make a decision, and quite a few of them already have. They're just doing what the Australians did. They're just hiding their guns away. And it's not going to give them up. So I think that's what you're going to see more of. But you have a weird situation in California. About 40% of California is still conservative. About 60% now is leftist. And, of course, they're using the illegal aliens, bringing them in and giving them driver's license, registering them to vote illegally, and they're sheltering them. I think what Trump has to do, in particular in California, is prosecute all of those involved, which is a federal crime, in the aiding and abetting of illegal aliens being in the United States. And, of course, also, facilitating violations of our voting laws, too. So I don't understand why they're waiting to prosecute these people. Sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, all of that is a direct violation of federal law.
Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia now. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you. Really, that was an excellent question, that last one that Stuart raised. Why aren't they prosecuting these people? It sounds like we have a separatist rebellion underway in the southwest of the United States, those five southwestern states, which Kaiser Wilhelm in World War I promised four of the five to Mexico if they would invade. And he said, I'll give you California, but I've already promised that to Japan. Now, we know that because the British informed Woodrow Wilson, who was determined he was going to stay out of the war. But if you look up the Zimmerman telegram, you'll find out that the British intercepted the telegram in which the Kaiser, German Kaiser, made that proposal to Mexico. I believe they're carrying out that plan, and I think that's why they're so bold about it. They believe they can win. Jerry Baum is obviously an operative of it, and there are many other politicians who are operatives of it. So the next question, beyond what you asked, you know, why aren't they prosecuting them, I think the next question that has to be asked is, what are the Oath Keepers going to do to press the issue about dealing with this this enemy alien foreign force? It's obviously hiding the name of globalists, but I think it goes deeper than that, and I think the depth of it involves religion.
So what are we going to do about it? I think what we're going to do is call on President Trump, actually petition him to post troops on the border, seal the border, making the point that the longer this goes on, the more illegitimate and irreversible transition of power in the leftist hands we're going to have. And it's illegitimate because these are illegal aliens that are voting. And so I think he needs to just make sure, just declare a national emergency and use his authority as commander-in-chief to put a wall of troops up and get the Army Corps of Engineers working to build the wall now. And then later, you can do what you can to play catch-up with Congress, but don't wait on Congress. I think he has a duty to do that. And I also think that we have a duty to volunteer as a militia of the states to go and assist as well. So that we should all, you know, basically throw our swords at his feet and say, we'll go. Let us know, you know, call us up, we'll go. And we would. So I think that's our responsibility to step up and just call on him to do what he has to do. And I think the other caller was kind of right. He's being distracted with foreign policy. And while he's being distracted with foreign policy, he's being, you know, we're all being, the clock's being run out on him while they bring more voters across for the Democrats. And I'm part Mexican. I come from a Mexican-American family from California and Arizona. It's not a racial issue. It's a cultural issue.
Well, and also we're talking about illegal immigration, Stuart. I mean, I have no qualms with legal immigration at all. I mean, that's how this country was built. But we can't have so many people just flooding the borders. You just can't do that. We're going to come back and wrap things up with final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Dr. Joseph Gallenberger joins us. Manifestation, changing your luck. I'm looking forward to that. When we come back in a moment, we'll take final phone calls with Stuart Rhodes as we talk about issues that affect all Americans. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with Stuart Rhodes and your phone calls as we are talking about Oath Keepers. When Oath Keepers started, Stuart, how many members originally?
Originally about 10 of us.
That was it?
About 10 of us in the core group. Right.
What has made it grow so large to 30,000?
I think it's the realization that people have that you've got a political class, and this has been both political parties, who are, you know, obviously no longer obedient to the Constitution, and in fact they're domestic enemies of it. And I think people realize that it's going to come down to, like that one caller said, it's going to come down to what do the police and military do That's going to make a big difference in how things go. And so our goal is to have the loyalty to the Constitution and that inspiration to follow their oath be so strong that they, you know, make it easy for us when the time comes to take our country back, and you know, even right now. You know, so I think it's an important mission. I think they'll realize that. And you got guys who served who realize they're not done. They still have an obligation under their oath, and they want to help. So it brings them, it gives them something to do. It gives them a new mission in life. It makes them feel like they have a contribution to make, which they do.
All right, back to the calls. Let's go to Scott in California. Hi, Scott. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hey, Scott from San Luis Obispo.
Hi there.
Hey, hello, Stuart. And I also want to thank Officer Greg that's not on the air for his service, too.
Thank you.
George, I actually asked this question in the past to another gun expert. I thought maybe I'd bring it up again.
Okay.
I saw a TV show where a detective gave advice to a woman how to defend herself from her crazy husband, where he recommended she buy a 10-gauge shotgun and put 8 shotgun shells and 2 beanbag shells in the shotgun first. So if an intruder breaks into the house, she could fire the 2 beanbag shells first as a warning shot. If the intruder didn't back off, it could be justifiable in front of a judge to defend herself. So my question, in your best opinion, in a state like California with no stand your ground law, does that sound like a reasonable defense if anything like that ever happened? As you mentioned, if there's a door nearby or not, in California, you're supposed to run.
Right.
And you just don't know at what time at night someone could break in your house and do something. You could have surveillance cameras, but I think it just sounds like, you know, I don't know what to do. So anyways, I just wanted your best opinion.
I think that many beanbag rounds could have utility. It depends on your capabilities.
And what exactly, Stuart, is a beanbag round?
It's a shotgun round that it's less. It'll call it less than lethal. I wouldn't call it, you know, not lethal.
It'll hurt you, sting you, but it won't kill you.
Well, you know, if it hits you in the throat, it could kill you. So, you know,
all right.
That's why I say less than lethal.
Or blind you.
Greg's not on. He's actually an expert in the use of less lethal munitions. But I think it's a viable option if you have the capabilities to handle yourself. You know what I'm saying? So, but I think the best thing to do would have, you know, layers. Have a really strong door, good windows. I think a dog is a good deterrent and also a good reaction to someone coming into your home. But yeah, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea if you think you can handle it properly to have a beanbag round for the first shot if you're concerned with having to defend yourself afterwards. Myself, personally, I'd still load birdshot. But you know, that's me. You know, if you're so worried about being prosecuted later on for defending yourself, then a beanbag round might not be a bad option.
Now you're still open to civil from, let's say, the perpetrator's family, right?
Of course, and you're open to if you have beanbag round, he's going to see you anyway. He's going to see you no matter what you do, probably. So, and like you said, you're in California with liberal judges. It also depends upon who he is, too. You know, so if you're unlucky enough to shoot someone that later on is paraded around as a poor victim of society, that's why he turned out the way he was. You could be up a creek without a paddle. So his concern is very legitimate. So I would say, you know, as a last resort, if you really want to worry about being prosecuted, then sure, consider beanbag rounds for the first two. But, you know, for a woman, I'd say no way. Load with birdshot. You know, for a guy, a little bit more, you know, even playing field as far as force goes.
Let's go to Pat in Anchorage, Alaska, first-time caller. Pat, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Norrie, and thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. Mr. Rhodes, I have a couple questions for you. One, I understand the sentiment of your organization, but I'm concerned about what I hear and what I see about the vetting of your members. I understand you have 30,000 members. I also understand that some of them have bad conduct discharges, dishonorable discharges.
We don't let anybody in with a dishonorable discharge. If we find if someone joins under false pretext, we kick them out. So we are going to be requiring, now we have a new IT system, we're going to be requiring that they upload the DD-214 when they apply. That's already, in fact, in place. So we'll be more proactive about weeding out bad apples.
And DD-214, of course, is what you get that proves that you were in the military and that you left honorably.
Right. So yeah, as far as dishonorable, we don't allow that. So if you've heard of that somewhere, I'd be curious to see where that was.
And I assume you have kicked some out, Stuart.
We have. We kicked some people out who turned out that they misrepresented their records. we were claiming things that weren't legit. So that's why we're going to be more, we are going to tighten up.
Don in Montana is now with us. Hello, Don. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I heard on the news, it was on national news tonight, in Florida, that a judge has now ordered hundreds of people to surrender their guns.
Yes.
Granted.
450 people.
Yep.
Is that the red flag laws where they're now making it easy for a judge to declare that a person's a danger to themselves or somebody else, then have them disarmed?
And what do you think of that, by the way, Stuart? I mean, if so, you do. Even
absolutely.
Even if law enforcement or other people say there could be some, or what if this guy's a hate poster on Facebook?
Doesn't
for
matter.
Example?
I mean, it used to be you had to be convicted of a crime, a felon, or you have to be adjudicated as criminally insane or insane to be disarmed, and that should be the standard. In other words, due process. Until they prove that you're someone who cannot have a firearm, you can't just make the mere accusation. What's happening now is they're letting it be a mere accusation. Someone doesn't like you, they go to the judge ex parte, which means you're not there. You're not there to confront your accusers, you're not there to present a defense. And the judge does not have to find you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, let alone have a jury do it, which is what your right really is. And so the judge determines that, yes, undetermined he's a danger to himself. And the first inkling you even have about this is they come to your house to disarm you.
Wow.
No process whatsoever.
So if, let's say, this individual was mad and sent somebody a text one day and said, God, I could kill you. Now, they're not going to do it, then they don't mean it. Right. But that text alone could get their firearm taken away from them?
Or just an argument. You know, it could be an argument, and the person says, I felt as in fear for my life. I mean, look what's happened in domestic disputes. You've had a large track record of people who are in domestic disputes, and they use the false accusation of violence, domestic violence, as a way to punish the other person and disarm them. With these red flag laws, it's not just your wife or girlfriend that can do that to you. It's now your neighbor, your coworker, someone on the street who saw a bumper sticker in the back of your car they don't like, and they call your license plate in and say, I saw him brandish a firearm. They just accuse you of things, you know, or he threatened me. And just that bare accusation alone, without your participation, like I said, it's ex parte. You don't get a chance to confront your accusers.
No,
you don't.
You
have to prove your innocence after the fact, after they've taken your guns. So that's not how it's supposed to go.
East of the Rockies, Theodore's with us in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Theodore, go ahead.
I'd like to comment on some of the things that we're seeing. And I'd like to say this. I was a serviceman. I don't want to thank you. And I was a law enforcement officer.
Well, thank you
and
for
my
both.
My father was a Democrat. When he came back, it's patriots like this guy you got on the radio who wouldn't give him VA loans. So I'm going to tell you something. When you say that Democrats are Marxists, I am outraged because that's your right-wing view. Based on the fact that you serve and you support a man who said people like me come from countries that's not worth even a good dump, then basically that's a racist comment. So if you serve that guy, what does that make you? And in fact, right after the G7 meeting in 2017, your boy, Trump, he disbanded the Cyber Command, which was formed under Mr. Obama in 2011. Why would he do that unless he got instructions to do that? So when you talk about people, sir, when you characterize people, look in the mirror, characterize yourself. It's patriots like you who disagree and disdain people like me who are of the wrong hue. And you said that, and George has you on his program, and in spite of the fact that he's always telling people he's even-handed. No, he's not. He's not even-handed. Did you reach out to the family who was shot by the guy in Florida? And that stand our ground law, let the black man kill a white man the first time under that law. You will see how they give justice out. So when you characterize people, sir, what you need to do is look in the mirror and realize that just because somebody disagrees with you, I am not a Marxist. I am not a Marxist. I'm a Christian. I love this country, but I'm a realist too. And when people tell me they are patriots, that's the last scoundrel of them racists and them Confederates. They always run into patriotism like the guy, Mr. Bundy, out there who's grazing his cows on government land without paying his taxes. That's welfare. But yet you look down on people like me simply because of my political affiliation and my hue. And it's the sad thing about it. if you want to work with people, what you need to do is cut that kind of stuff out. You need to suppress that.
Let's not react to it, Theodore, before we're out of time.
I'm not a racist.
There's your scolding for the night.
So let me answer that. I didn't say every Democrat is a Marxist. What I said is the Democratic Party is now dominated by Marxists, and that is true. That's the reality you need to accept. Go take a good look at the leadership of your party. Go look at that Cortez woman who went up there in New York. What is she? She's a proud socialist. Look at where your party's being steered. Look at Maxine Waters supporters burning the American flag, stomping on it, saying, F the government, America was never great. They're the ones who are anti-government and also being racist. She was yelling black power. Those are her supporters. I'm not saying every Democrat's like that. What I'm saying is the leadership of the party is like that. So, but me, I don't care what your skin color is. And that shooting in Florida, frankly, what I saw is when the guy was thrown on the ground, the black guy was backing away as the man drew the gun. I think the white guy should have just waited and let the man retreat, and that would have been sufficient. I think there's a pretty good chance he could be prosecuted. I don't think it was necessarily self-defense. And in fact, the sheriff himself said that. It gives him pause. So we'll see what the prosecutors do. But I don't think the answer is to get rid of standing ground laws, and I don't think standing ground laws are inherently racist, which is what you seem to think. Okay?
No, I agree with you. Just like with the
Michael Brown shooting. I think that cop was justified because Michael Brown was trying to take his gun by beating him in the face. It wasn't a racial issue.
All Michael Brown had to do was to oblige by the officer's request, and everything would have been fine.
Now, there are some situations, like the shooting of Daniel Shavers, a good example, where you had a white guy who was shot in an obvious, ridiculous situation where he was being forced to play a deadly game of Simon Says. That's a kid, the guy shot in the hallway of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he got Tamir Rice, the kid who had a toy gun in his hand. That cop should never have been a cop. That was a horrible shooting. But to me, those aren't racial issues. That goes to the fact that there are people who don't belong in the police service at all who are being let in. And everyone wants to racialize everything, including your last caller.
Absolutely. And
I don't think it's flying about race.
You have to look back at Greg McWhorter, who was on with us last hour, a dedicated police officer, to be sure.
Yeah, a black cop. And so too bad he's not on to answer that man's call.
Let's go next to Jeff in Oklahoma City. Jeff, take it away.
Hey, I have a marijuana-related felony from the early 90s.
Okay.
I've never had any kind of gun issues. I mean, I like guns. I had guns before, but now I can't. And I feel like, you know, when they made it illegal for felons to have guns, that they just opened the door to start disarming everybody. A lot of stuff he's talking about.
You're right.
You know, because now, like in the Clinton administration, where Clinton made a bunch of new laws where anybody had a domestic violence stuff, now mm-hmm. they started disarming them, and a lot of people lost their jobs, security guys and cops. And, you know, that was just the backdoor way of disarming America. And I think everybody should be allowed to carry a gun.
What do you think of domestic violence convictions, Stuart, and the right to carry?
Well, I think it should be the same as any conviction for any serious crime. But what I was talking about earlier is there's no conviction. It's just the restraining order process allows a person to make, once again, mere accusations. And then based on that, under the Lautenberg Amendment, your gun rights are destroyed. I think that's a violation of due process. Now, what this gentleman was talking about is kind of a good point, too. Once you've served your time and you're let back into society, should you have your rights restored? I think you should. I really think you should. If you're not safe to be in public, then you shouldn't be in public at all, okay? So, but I think, nonviolent crimes, I think he's got a good point.
Are you picking up, as I am, this feeling of divide in this country, more so than we've ever felt in a long time?
Absolutely. I mean, that last caller, the black gentleman who read into what I said, I've never said anything about someone's hue, their color. I could give a damn about that. And yet in his head, when he hears patriot, he thinks racist. When he hears Trump supporter, he thinks racist. And it doesn't make a difference what else you say. In his own mind, he's decided you're a racist, you're a bad guy. And so he's projecting onto me the same kind of blanket animus towards the other group that he has. because I didn't say the Democratic Party is all communist. I said it's been run by communists. That's true. But no, the divide is pretty bad. It's an intentional divide, and I think the only real way to conquer it is for Americans to look each other in the eye face to face.
All right, my friend. Stuart, thanks for being on the program. Good luck with Oath Keepers. Keep watching our back for us, okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you. God bless.
We're going to be back in a moment with Joseph Gehlenberger. Now that we've got you all riled up tonight, we're going to talk about luck and manifestation and how his experiments have truly proven that your attitude changes so many other things. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.